I'm Margaret. I'm a compulsive overeater.
Hi, Margaret.
I've been abstinent since the 18th of October 2014, so it's just about 18 months. Now, I'm going to send a photograph round that was taken just over 2 years ago, just before I started my current recovery and period of abstinence. I had to make some notes. I wrote the whole life story out and then I thought, well, I'll just make some bullet points to try and remember what I wanted to say to you. I just wanted to let you know that I'm 67 years old. I've been in OA since October 2007, but I count my recovery from May 2014. Over the whole period in OA, my weight loss is 41 pounds, but 27 of that has been in recovery. And that's, I think, more reflected in the photograph. It's no way a special story or anything like that, probably a very average thing. In my early life, I grew up without a mother, and I was brought up by my aunt and uncle. I used to see my father over a weekend, every 2 weeks. My aunt and uncle ran a fish and chip shop. And I still think of myself as a bit of a connoisseur of fish and chips. And so it's no surprise that sort of in my early photos of me showed me to be a chubby child, but not way over the top as far as a weight is concerned. And that time ago, there really wasn't anything put forward as it is today regarding weight control and diet clubs and things like that. There was none of that about. So there was nothing within our family about whether we were overweight. We were all slightly overweight, but we were not way, way overweight. But then cooking then was very different to how it is now. There was a lot more focus on using fat in cooking. I think nowadays fish and chips are cooked in oil, but at that time they used to be cooked in dripping. So it's no wonder that sort of fatties can still be, in effect, a binge food for me. But once I got to secondary school, I was very interested in playing sports. I loved anything that you could throw or you could hit, but don't ask me to do any running. And at secondary school, this was the first time anybody told me that I should lose weight, and that was a school doctor. It would have been a bit of a shock, I think, to me at the time, and it involved sitting with the teachers at lunchtime so they could have some control over what I ate. But I had no control over what I ate at home or what I ate on my way to and from school. And I think that just petered out. I really can't remember sort of what happened at that point. But still, there were no outside sort of things. I didn't have a thing in my head that I ought to lose weight. That was my first experience of that. From when I was 12 or 13, my aunt and uncle had retired and they went off on a trip of a lifetime. And so from then on, I lived solely with my father. And I found that a difficult relationship with my father. It seems to be just so very easy for me to upset him. When he was upset, he just didn't talk to me. And there were only the two of us in the house, so then it was very distressing for me when I was on my own. But when he was talking to me, he didn't actually talk to me an awful lot. We didn't have great conversations, and maybe that was because, for the first 10 or so years of my life, we'd not grown up together. And I just tried not to upset him because I didn't like the results. And that system carried on up to when he died, when I was 39. So I was conditioned, I think, for a very long time, because he was very protective of me. So he didn't want me to go out and do certain things, and I never did understand where the line was. I could do, some things were fine, but some things weren't approved of. And that may have been okay when I was quite a young child, but this carried on for a very long time into my adulthood. And because it was a close relationship, this was my sole resentment for many years. I didn't have any energy to resent anybody else, because I knew what I didn't like. My second time when somebody told me that I had to lose weight was when I started work. Because at that time, if you didn't fully meet conditions, you had a period of probation of 12 months to meet these conditions. And mine was to lose a stone. Because at that point, I weighed 12 stone. And they suggested I should weigh 11 stone, which, funnily enough, is just about what the BMI says nowadays. But how they found that out in those days, I really don't know. Because this was a swinging 60s. And there was an awful lot of pressure on being slim, being able to wear outrageous fashions, miniskirts and other outrageous things. And I realised that I couldn't wear things like that. So I was given this opportunity to lose weight, and for 9 months sort of took no action at all. This is a very familiar thing in my life. You give me a deadline and I will push it to the absolute. And I made it by the skin of my teeth, became a confirmed appointment, and never looked back as far as being in a job was concerned. But was not happy because I didn't fit in with all the girls at work who could wear these fashions. And suddenly, things in magazines were coming at you in all directions about how to lose weight. And this just seemed to be making me very unhappy. And whenever I tried to lose weight, I got no help within my family. So it was very much the yo-yo situation. Something else I wanted to say then. But so diet clubs started to spring up. They're nothing like as organised today, but I remember going to one, and my system was to go and get weighed and then go to the nearest fish and chip shop on my way home, because that didn't count on the way home. It didn't count until the following week when the scales showed an answer that you didn't like. So that carried on sort of for a long time, trying to lose weight, because I had this very firm idea in my head that that would be the answer to all my unhappiness. To be slim would answer everything. But I never actually achieved that, so at that time I never knew whether it was the answer or not. But I would have other crazy ideas as well, like and there was some book I read, and I thought the answer to becoming slim was to have appendicitis. So, you know, again, I was wishing to be really unwell to get what I thought was this big goal in my life. And so sorts of things carried on, going up, going down, eating whatever I wanted, not eating whatever I wanted. It was all a very familiar story to everybody. Then when I was 39, my father died, and I thought, freedom at last, free to do what I wanted, free to lose weight in particular. So I look back on that now and I think that I'm ashamed of that reaction to his death. But at the time, that was the way I thought, and I thought, oh, I can do anything I want now. I can spend money, because he didn't want to make do amend was a result of his philosophy when it came to things around the house. Oh, I can have all those things now that I've always looked at, all those catalogues that I used to look at, thinking how I could redesign the house and all that. So it's no surprise that sort of for quite a while after he died, I used to have nightmares that he'd actually come back and find out I was spending all this money. So over the next 18 years from then, I tried a variety of diets. I did go to my GP and I did say, I think I'm addicted to food. But that didn't actually sort of ring any bells with the GP, even though I think the GP practice is a very good GP practice. But I went two or three times and I had diet fruits. And then I had some very weird tablets that you took that went to fat binding tablets. And they had some not very pleasant side effects at all. I could be easily swayed by diets in magazines for two or three days at a time, anyhow. I did the famous cabbage soup diet, which was, that was so horrible. And that, then it came to 2002, when I was just about at my heaviest weight of 15 stone, and I heard about a meal replacement diet, and I went on to that because not only was it going to help me to lose weight, it was going to address all these issues that I had about why I ate. I thought, oh, that sounds good. And for the next 5 months, I lost an awful lot of weight. And then as soon as it was starting to introduce food again, I was back to binging again. And at no point did I understand what they were trying to do about helping me to address my eating. I tried hypnotism. That worked for a while until I met somebody that I was in awe of in my family, and that sort of knocked me back off that again. I tried just counselling. But that again, at that point, was just something that I thought, no, I don't want you to ask me how I feel. I want you to tell me how I feel and what to do. So I think that I can see sort of at this time that I was not taking responsibility at all for what was happening. I wanted somebody else, whether it was a person or a diet club, to actually cure me of overeating. That's the only problem that I thought that I had, overeating. And I was happy to pay somebody to do that for me. So there were various experiments. Some didn't involve a lot of outlay. Meal replacement thing was quite expensive at the time. And throwing money at it just didn't work. When I wasn't dieting, I had no control over food. And I'd also persuaded myself I had no idea how to feed myself. That I'd never been taught to cook. And the way, you know, some people read recipes in magazines and hang on food cookery programs on the television, that again was a bit of a mystery to me. So I did a lot of eating of takeaways and fish and chips. Buying frozen ready meals from the supermarket. That was my way of trying to feed myself, but that was not a good way to feed myself at all either. I'm a member of a small group of ladies who meet on a fortnightly basis, and everybody has to take turn being the hostess. One of the things the hostess does is provide nibbles while we have the start of our meeting, so there will be crisps and nuts and sweets around, and then later on there will be coffee and chocolate biscuits and cheese and crackers and all this. That was just horrendous for me. I used to think, you know, people didn't see my hand doing this all the time. wrong. People would say, oh, you're having some more of those? And I think, oh, yes, I am. Thank you. And I'd be in the kitchen as well when the tidying up went on, hoovering things up. I used to try to buy people chocolate either at Easter or at Christmas as presents, and I had to buy it two or three times to get it actually to them because I ate it. And there were other foods that I couldn't take then. So I had a total lack of success with diets, even though I now was on my own. So when early retirement came, when I was age 57, I thought, well, this is it now. The problem's been at work. Another year later, no, there was still the problem. So then I tried my most expensive way of throwing money at diets. I went to a treatment centre and found it rather baffling. But they did introduce me to the 12 steps, and I left there with a big book and an AA 12 and 12, which I think is probably the best thing that they did for me. I came to OA in October 2007 and I was baffled. Totally baffled. But eventually I got a sponsor and I was working the steps with a sponsor, but I wasn't abstinent. And I carried on my food experiments, buying in food, and found that I was just totally powerless over food. So powerless that I wanted, well, that I was willing to cross the dual carriageway outside my house to get to the garage to get food. And that is a very busy road. I started coming to this meeting in March 2014. And within a couple of months, I got a new sponsor. And that has just been such a turnaround for me. We identified my binge foods. It took time to get a food plan that I could work with, and I could learn that I could actually feed myself nourishing meals. And as I've said before, I've been abstinent since October of 2014. This time around, the differences have been that I've worked the steps very slowly, so that I've only in the last couple of weeks started on step 8. But slowly for me is the way that I need to do things. I try to do things too quickly, I don't absorb them. I say, yeah, I got that, right, on to the next. And I haven't really, at all. And so I've been really grateful that my sponsor would let me work slowly and thoroughly. And that in that time, if something came up that needed immediate attention, that we would work the steps on it, and then we'd go back to the step work. And I've just been amazed at the changes. Abstinence is the biggest change. It's something that I could never imagined. I mean, I've taken 65 years and not been abstinent, no matter how much I've tried. And this has been the biggest change that I ever imagined could happen. But there have been other changes. Improvement in my relationship with my family. And recently, through the family, we started working on family history, and that meant I had to go through some papers that had been hidden in a cupboard, and I found some letters, references my father's employers had given him, and it seemed as though they knew an entirely different person to the one that I knew, but I'm willing to accept that now, because my point of view has been skewed by food for so long. But I'm working on this and I'm coming around to it. But all these changes have come to me through working the programme, because no matter how much I wished them in the past, they never happened. And I'm just so grateful that I've got this chance to improve relations, just generally with people that I meet in a supermarket or whatever, that I don't have to hide from people, because I've spent a lot of time hiding and isolating from people. And I've been given a chance at life, because I take my food plan now with me wherever I go. And holidays have just been a complete change to me. They're not an excuse to eat. They're an excuse to actually go and enjoy yourself somewhere. And for me, most of that is to go somewhere scuba diving, which I took up before I came into OA. But when I started, because of my weight, I had so much extra weight onto me to actually be able to sink in the water. And now it's a lot less is that, so it's a lot easier to carry all the gear around and actually get into the water and have the freedom to be in the water. It's one of those weird paradoxes. The more you weigh, the more weight you have to add to sink. It's because fat floats. I'm going to leave it there. Thank you.